yesterday on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. So we had just started reading the Braisa. We read the part of Daya Shata. So now the Braisa continues, starting with the word Utsricha, the last line, word on the fourth line. Yaakov, can I impose upon you? Thank you. Okay. Why?
To make sure that she's not pregnant with a non-Jewish man, maybe.
Okay. So the, well...
Or she was conceived when she was not.
Correct. The really crucial point is to determine, as Rashi says, Bein zera shenizra b'kdusha, lezera hanizra shelo b'kdusha. So that's an interesting question. This really raises a fundamental halachic question. Let me present you the question. What difference does it make whether the zera was nizra b'kdusha or lo nizra b'kdusha? No. So I want to know, is that true? Now, there's a Gemara in Yevamos that talks about an issue that relates to this, but I'm not aware of an explicit Gemara that talks about the status of the child. Let me tell you why this question is actually such a crucial question in a very much contemporary halacha lemaisa question. Surrogacy. What is surrogacy? It means you take the egg of one woman and you implant it in another woman's uterus. You fertilize it. You plant it in another woman's uterus. And the child grows like a normal child and the child is born. The DNA of the child belongs to one woman. The gestational mother, we talk about a DNA mother, or the genetic mother, and the gestational mother, it is developed in the womb of another woman. Now, the identity of the father generally is pretty clearly accepted. I don't know if there's a fringe minority opinion. The identity of the father is whoever's DNA, the sperm. That's pretty straightforward. That's the only contribution fundamentally in the biological process that a man makes to his child. Hopefully he makes a lot of other contributions later, and even during pregnancy, but those are not immediate sine qua non contributions. But his genetic contribution is the one and only contribution he really makes. But the woman is obviously much more complicated. And the question is, who is the mother? It matters for who are the child's relatives. It matters if one, the egg donor or the surrogate, are not Jewish, and one is Jewish. It matters for, is the child born Jewish, or does the child have to be converted? And that in itself contains nafkaminas later as to whether or not this child could marry a Kohen, if it's a girl. It matters less if it's a boy. That's a crucial question. It also matters even if it's a boy. If the boy has to be converted, if he converts and he marries a Gioras, l'chatchila, his daughter may not marry a Kohen, following whichever Shita that was. Again, I don't remember. It's Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yaakov, Rabbi Yosei. The l'chatchila, the child of a Ger and a Gioras may not marry a Kohen. So there are lots and lots and lots of nafkaminas. Adir?
Or matter also for the male child's status in terms of whether he is a Kohen or not?
Well, that would depend upon whether he's born Jewish, right? If he's born Jewish, then yes, the presumption is a Kohen. If he's born not Jewish, then he's a convert. He's not a Kohen. There are some Achronim who question whether or not Yoyotze Puruvu, they mefakpek a little bit for the father, you know, when it's not a natural fertilization. I always thought that opinion is very hard to understand, but it exists. It's real posts can raise that question. It's, for the most part, it's neither here nor there. When a man cannot conceive otherwise with his wife, his choice is having children this way or not having children. So technically, did he fulfill Puruvu? Okay, what if his wife dies? Should he marry another wife, have more children, whatever? Okay, you can come with nafkamina, but the crucial question is, who is the mother? Now, the pashtus is, and this, there was an essay about this written Halacha Refuah by Rav Hirschler. I want to say, but I could be wrong, the date is 1978. I could be wrong about that. where he makes an assumption, which I think is correct, that it's really dependent upon precisely this issue. This issue is what happens when a woman becomes pregnant and then converts. Now, what does happen when a woman becomes pregnant and converts? So before we talk about that, it's a Gemara in Yevamos, but it's not clear what the Gemara says. So, think about it for a moment. Why do we care whether or not the child was Nizra B'Kedusha or not? Why do we care? Zach?
We were discussing Seder.
I'm sorry, let me add one little piece of one. If the child is born B'Kedusha, child is born when the mother's Jewish, why do we care about whether he was Nizra B'Kedusha or not? So I'm going to further ask the question. There is a difference. I'm sorry, if the father is not Jewish, okay, and the assumption, I think, in this case, it's a pretty good assumption. The pretty good assumption the father would not be Jewish. As if she was pregnant when she converted, the father probably wasn't Jewish, although it doesn't really matter. It almost certainly doesn't matter. If she became pregnant when she wasn't Jewish, for sure, what is the relationship between the child and his father? So let me step back further. You have a non-Jewish woman and a Jewish man have a child. What is the relationship between that child and his father? A non-Jewish woman and a Jewish man. The relationship between the child and the father is?
Nothing.
Nada. Nothing. A non-Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man. What is the relationship between the child and the father? It is his child. But an Oved Kochavim Yesh Lo Chayis. The Gemara proves it from a pasuk of Hadad Rimon Ben Tav Rimon or something like that. They prove that the child has a relationship in Torah with his father. He's not Jewish. Until what? Until the child converts. So it's fair to say that regardless of the status of the father, if the father isn't Jewish when he impregnates, whether he is or isn't Jewish when the woman becomes pregnant, the child will have no relationship to his father one way or the other. Now,
the child's going to be related to his father. Not Jewish.
This child who winds up being Jewish in the end, however he becomes Jewish, which is what we have to talk about, is not going to be related to his father. So there's no nafgamina. What's that?
They convert before.
No, if the mother converts before becoming pregnant, then if the father's Jewish, it's one big happy family.
Right.
But if the mother converts after becoming pregnant, it's clear that the father has no relationship to the child. Yes, but there's no nafkamina in this case, because in this case it's almost certain that the father isn't Jewish. That's the normal case. I know in the contemporary period we would deal with the shaila, right? A Jewish guy who's living with a non-Jewish woman, she decides to convert. There you might have that shaila. But in the Gemara's case, it's unlikely it's a Jewish man. But in Echanami, it would matter. So within Rashi's thinking, what is the nafkamina between whether or not the Vlad was Nizra B'Kedusha or not? When the mother converts and the child is then born, what is the status of that child? Yes?
I don't know why it would really matter here, but I know we talk about, in the fourth paragraph, there's whether or not
Well, no, only you're making an assumption. So that child, the Mishnah's case, well, okay, hold on, you're right, that would be an afkamina. I see, that's a nafgamina that's an outgrowth of where I'm trying to take us. Now, you're right, it would be a nafgamina. Let me formulate it this way. A convert is not subject to the rules of Nara Marasa. A child born Jewish is subject to the rules of Nara Hamarasa. Okay, that, in other words, if you have a conversion process, then you're subject to the rules of Skila. You don't have, it may not have a Pesach Pesach, but you're subject to the rules of Skila. If you are not if you're convert of some kind, then you don't get skila, right? Then it's a regular eishes ish, okay? Because it's ki asa son of Allah be Yisrael, I think. Lisnos beis avia. Okay, so now let's sort of step back and think about the process of a woman who converts when she's pregnant, right? Because we want to know whether she was pregnant before or after she's converted. So the assumption I'm going to work with is that when a woman converts, the child is born is halachically Jewish. It's an interesting question, whether that, is that true or not? We usually assume that way. The Gemara in Yevamos has the following question. The Gemara in Yevamos says, let me quote the Gemara. The Gemara was not too far, I believe, from the Gemaras that we were looking at earlier in the year. The Gemara should be, I want to say it's on Daf Ayin Ches. We looked at from the Mishnah Ayin Ches, but it's the Gemara before. Rava says, Nochris uberesh shenizgayra bino ein sarach tevila. A Gentile woman who converts, her child does not require tevila. Now that's very, very interesting. Before we talk about the Gemara's analysis of that line, Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. It's very interesting. What does it imply when you say her child doesn't require tevila? So one possibility is to say that the child is Jewish. But if that's the case, what do you mean, Eino Tzarech Tevila? Why don't you just say he's Jewish? Unless that's your shorthand of saying it. What is the alternative understanding which the Gemara is going to broach, Mati?
Maybe it's kind of like the child is something of a separate entity, but not entirely within the mother, so that when the mother does Tevila, I don't
know. Do you know this Gemara, or are you guessing on your own?
I think I've seen this.
Okay, that's fine.
It's like based in a star.
What's that?
It's kind of like something in a hidden part of the body.
Okay.
So it would count. It would be all of the tefillah with the rest of the mother.
Okay. So the Gemara seems to take this statement, is not sure what to do with it. The Gemara is bothered by the fact, the Gemara starts into the assumption here that the child actually requires conversion. And then the Gemara doesn't understand why doesn't the child require tevila. Because after all, the child didn't go to the mikveh. And if you're going to tell me, that the child did go to the mikveh, he went inside his mother. Well, there's one little problem. It's a chatzitza. So the Gemara says, and even though you may know that the halach of chatzitzos are as follows. Rubo hamakpid, if a majority of your body is covered with a chatzitza, and it's a chatzitza because you're makpid, it's something you really don't like having or you want to remove, that's a chatzitza min haTorah. If you have a chatzitza on a minority of the body, on some, but you're makpid about it, it's chotzeitz mit rabbanon. As is, if you have a chatzitza on a majority of the body, but you don't care at all about it, it's chotzeitz mit rabbanon. And the implication of the Gemara is that a miut she'eno makpid is not even chotzeitz at all. So the Gemara says, even if you want a taina, that rubo ve'eno makpid is good min haTorah, and that's why the child doesn't work tvila, rubo! But not kulo. Right? The entire child has a chatzitza between him and the mikveh. Not just his mother, but the embryonic sac as well. So how could you possibly say the tevila is good? Pashtus, as an aside, if you put me inside a bubble, like some type of a metal bubble, and then you put me, dump me under the water, I don't think the reason why the tevila is no good is because it's a chatzitza or on kulo. It's because I didn't go in the mikveh. I don't think that's called chatzitza. So the Gemara says, though, kulo! Kulo, Shana Machbid, who says kulo is good? So the Gemara gives an answer, and it says, Shani ubar dahainu revise. Only the Rebbeinu Shalom, I think, knows what that really means. So the Gemara says, no, ubar is different because that's the natural state. Shani ubar dahainu revise. This Gemara said, the simple reading of the Gemara sounds as if it's the following, that the tvila on the mother also constitutes a tvila on the vlad. He's gone to the mikveh also. Why? Well, so this is the crucial question. Is it because it's not a chatzitza, which might be the simple reading of the Gemara, or is it because the Gemara's answer really is, but it didn't say this, is that uba yerach ima, that an uber doesn't have an independent existence. The mother has an arm, she's got two arms, hopefully. She's got two legs. She has a nose, she has two eyes, she has two ears. She's got a baby growing inside her. Normally we assume that people have ramach evarim, so she has ramat evarim. She's got another aver growing inside her. Very nice. She has a growth. And there's a very, very big difference between these two understandings of the Gemara. Because if you say that ubar yerach imo means that the ubar, if you say that an ubar hainu revise means that the ubar is going to the mikveh too, that in this case, because this is the ubar's natural state, tefillah goes on the mother and the tefillah goes on the vlad, what you're really saying is that the child underwent a conversion. The child underwent a conversion. If, however, you say that the child is just another limb of the mother, then it means the child was not, child didn't undergo conversion, the mother converted, and now the child is Jewish.
Why is it
different? What's that?
Why is that the case?
If it uber is Yerech Imo, it means he doesn't have an independent existence until he's born.
I mean, do you say that like when a person converts and goes to the mikvah, that their arm is Jewish? If your arm is considered another limb, then
no. The person, you're only talking about people, not limbs. The point is that this woman is now Jewish. When a child should be born subsequently, it's like a child being born. It's a new person. It's like a Jewish mother gave birth to a Jewish child. Okay.
Meaning traditions of birth.
Yes.
But that's the
that statement doesn't really work. Yeah. Meaning the idea that the baby is a limb of the mother, and therefore when she converts,
she becomes Jewish. It's not that the limb becomes Jewish; it's that the limb doesn't have an independent existence. And it doesn't sound like what the Gemara is saying, right? It sounds like the Gemara is saying, "What's that?" Very possibly, yeah. Very possibly. In other words, the Gemara's language doesn't sound like that, but that could have been potentially another teretz. In other words, here's the story. The Gemara's approach is only working probably within the shita that uber lav yerachimo. And the simple reading then is that the answer is that the woman has gone to the mikvah and her vlad has gone to the mikvah and he's converted as well. Now, if you, however, hold that uber yerachimo, then it could very well be that it's not that the child converts, it's that the child is born Jewish. Okay? Yes.
Wait, is it possible to have a chatzitza made out of your own flesh? If you go to the mikvah like this, or with your fists closed, does it matter how much of your skin is?
Yes, you could have a chatzitza of your own flesh, except that chatzitza is normally only on things that are normally uncovered. In other words, the base there are two places in the body. There's something called base hastarim, and then there's makom balua. Balua doesn't. We say the following: a woman doesn't really have to. She doesn't have to open her mouth in the mikvah, but it has to be roy the bs mayim. That's why women don't typically eat meat. They're not supposed to eat stuff that gets stuck between the teeth on the day they go to the mikvah, because they're afraid that maybe it'll be something left between the teeth. And even though you don't need bs mayim, you need roy the bs mayim. That's base hastarim. Place that's balua completely, where something normally can never get. It doesn't matter if there's a chatzitza. Doesn't even matter if there's a chatzitza. So inside the uterus doesn't, theoretically you could have not just the uterus, probably let's say in the uterus you could have an IUD, and we're not going to say it's a chatzitza, because it's not even, it's less than beis hastarim, it's makom palua. Okay? That's why the food in your stomach is not chatzitza. You don't say that you require roy lebias mayim on the inside walls of the stomach. We don't, because that's not beis hastarim. That's, I don't want to call it, it's not beis hablia, it's makom palua. Okay. All right. So now, if we're talking about a non-Jewish father in this case by the Gioras, so then if you believe that the child becomes a person at the time of birth and gets his status then? Then there's no nafkamina. Who cares whether or not she was Jewish? The father isn't Jewish. So in the end, he's not going to have any connection to this child who either is a convert or was born Jewish. So what difference is there between Zeresh and Nizbikdush and Zeresh and Shalom Nizbikdush? And the answer is probably none. But one doesn't matter. It matters if you believe that the Ubar undergoes conversion in utero. And if you believe that the Ubar undergoes conversion in utero, so then it really does matter when she becomes pregnant. If she becomes pregnant before she converts, the children will be effectively Gerim. If she becomes pregnant after she converts, the children will be born Jews. That would be clear. And as a Jewish woman who has a child, even with a non-Jewish man, the child's 100% Jewish. I mean, the way we paskin.
And they're not clear for that. Is it very common? No, the father's staying
alone. No, but the nafkamina would be, let's say, she marries or he marries a ger giores. Can the daughter marry a Kohen? We can come up with that. And the question would also be, is the child related to the mother, min haTorah? Or to siblings from the mother, min haTorah? Okay? Okay. We're going to go through this slowly. I have to reconstruct a piece in my head. But now, so that's, we want to know when the woman became pregnant. And theoretically, it would really, really matter if you believe that the child undergoes conversion utero. If it doesn't, then you have to figure out, you know, there might be other nafkaminas as well. Okay. So here's the part where we have to think very carefully. Let's take the following scenario. A woman who is not Jewish becomes pregnant with twins, twin boys. She converts, and she gives birth. Mazel tov, mazel tov. Very nice. Biologically speaking, these children are brothers, both brothers from the father and brothers from the mother. Halachically speaking, obviously, they are not brothers from the father because they don't have a father. Therefore, should one happen to die without children, there would be no mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza. Because the mitzvah of Yibum or Chalitza is only ki yeshvu achim yachdav, and the Gemara has in second parak Yivamos has exereshav of achim, whatever it is, that it's only achim min ha'av. I mean, it could be achim min ha'av min aim, but in order for there to be a mitzvah and a permission to do Yibum, you have to be achim min ha'av at least. Now, if you have brothers, a regular case, you have a woman who has two sons, one from her first husband, one from her second husband. There's obviously no mitzvah yibum chalitza, but not only that, but there's an iser erva for one to marry the other brother's wife, because that's eshes ach shelo b'makom mitzvah. Ervash eshes achicha is achicha bein min ha'av bein min ha'ein. Pretty straightforward. There may be a Torah's kohanim that holds differently. Look at Tosus on Daf Beis and Aleph and Yevamos. Tosus has a discussion about that. But Pashtus is certainly the Bavli holds, the Mishnah is beferish. Eshes ach min ha'ein is bikares. So now I ask you a question. Clearly, these twin boys who were born from a mother who became pregnant before she converted, but were born after she, who were conceived in a mother before she converted, but were born after she converted, clearly they are not achim min ha'av. But the question is, are they achim min ha'im? Are they connected to the mother or not? If they are, then there's an iser doraisa of marrying the other's wife. If they're not, at least min haTorah, they're allowed to marry each other's wives. And certainly if they did, the child would not be a mamzer. They wouldn't have to bring a karban. They wouldn't have to bring a karban chat if they did a b'shogeg. This is not my discussion. This is the Gemara's explicit discussion in Yevamos on, I think, Daf Tzadites. Tzadiches. Tzadizayin Amid Beis near the bottom. So what is the din? So before I tell you what the din is, let's sort of sketch out what this din means. What does it mean for us?
Why would they not
So based upon what we've said until now, I want you to sketch out what should be, Danny?
If the children are converted inside of the mother's womb but are not part of the mother's conversion and they're not born Jewish by the fact that they were born from their mother, meaning that they were converted themselves,
yes,
then they are converts, which means they don't have anything in the relationship.
Correct. If the conversion actually goes on the mother in the womb, then three people convert at the same time and they're not related. But if you believe that the conversion is actually just on the mother, and then she gives birth to twins, then they don't share a father, but they share a mother. Now, what does that mean? Now that should be very straightforward. What does that tell us about it really goes back to the larger question. What does that tell us about a person's personhood? When is that determined? This question perhaps could have been asked independently, just based upon the question of Ubar Yerachima, Ubar Yerachima. If you believe that in a sense, the Gemara doesn't use the terminology in any of these sugyos. I don't remember what it uses, if early in Ayin Cheses use it, but if you believe that Ubar is Yerech Imo, and that means when the children are born, they are born Jewish as brothers from the mother. What does that say about when do they get their status, Adir?
That implies that their status is sometime after the mother's conversion.
Correct. And therefore it must mean that it comes sometime after what preceded conversion?
Conception.
It means that their status is not determined at the time of conception. It's determined when then? Probably, if you got to pick a point, when is it probably determined?
Birth.
At birth. If, however, you believe that Uber Lav Yerachim and the conversion takes place in utero, when does their status as people come into being? As people? Possibly at the time of conception, yes. You could say 40 days, and you have a number of options there, maybe 40 days, but let's say a conception. Now I bring you back to the question of, any of you read Dr. Seuss? I don't think it's a part of the series. I don't think Dr. Seuss wrote this one. Maybe he did. Are You My Mother?
That's not Dr. Seuss.
It's not. It's put in the same series, but it's not.
Yeah.
Are You My Mother? What does this say about who a person's mother is? What's that? Both sides?
No, they depend.
So if you believe that the child gets this, children get their status when they're born, and because they're born to a Jewish mother, they're brothers from the mother, so then it suggests that it's the birth mother that matters. It means the woman who carries them. If, however, you believe that the children already, at some point, being before her conversion, have the status of personhood, which then gets split apart by the gerus, so they're not related to each other or to their mother anymore, then it's possible, not guaranteed, it's possible that you could say that it follows the conception, it follows the DNA mother. Not machrach, but you could. Yaakov. Egg into a woman who's not the egg.
Right. Does fertilizing an egg count as conception, or would
implanting? I'm going to assume implantation. Let's take that for the moment.
Why would it ever be the biological?
No, it would be the mother is determined by who are the biological parents, but it only becomes l'chulei alma. No matter what your position is, let's say on abortion. We don't believe that a fertilized egg in a dish has any status of personhood. The best explanation anyone ever came up with, and it's a lousy one, I'm not going to say who said this, as to why maybe we would agree. Remember, there's a whole to-do about disposing of, you know, fertilized eggs, you know, which weren't implanted. Someone said it could be hashchas hazera. That was the best you could come up with. It can't be abortion. Right? It can't be any kind of feticide. So the first possible time that child, that egg, is on its way to, you know, becoming a person could be when it's implanted, but it could be that its status then is not by where it's implanted, but, you know, but by who is responsible for making the contribution to that. I think what you will agree with me, though, is that if you believe that the children are born Jewish, that's clear that it's the birth process that gives them their status as people, because that determines their yichus and their relationship to one another, in which case it's almost compelling, I think absolutely compelling, that the mother is the mother who birthed them. Because had it been the mother who gave, let's say, had it been the mother who gave the genetic material, who gave the mother, so the when you convert them, again, that goes back to the point, you convert them, it should shatter their status. In other words, the only shaychus the birth mother, the genetic mother has, is to the original egg, the fertilization. She doesn't contribute beyond that. Thus, if you're going to argue that at that time the children's status is still indeterminate because they're not people yet, it must be the birth process or something later on that gives them their status.
It would just be implantation within the surrogate, but that's still, why would, I mean, if it's all about implantation in the surrogate, why would it matter who provides the DNA?
You're saying that it's even possible that if you believe they are being converted in utero, still you could argue the surrogate mother. But I'm saying the opposite. If you believe that they're Jewish upon birth, it must be that it's the birth mother that determines. It's the birth that gives them their status. And they're now. So really, it just depends upon what is the din by these two twin brothers. Is there an Isser D'oraisa of Eishas Ach, Shalobo Malka Mitzvah, because they're Eishas Ach Ben Ha'im? Or are they just unrelated to each other completely? That is the crucial point. Mati?
Side question. Is there a Shita that exists that Uber La De'achimo by animals? Like, for instance, if you were to do Shchita on the...
That's where the discussion comes up first in Shas, is by... So, no. So we, I think, generally assume by animals it's pretty clear. I mean, there is a machlokas, but by shechita it's not a machlokas. It might be gzeras hakasuv. This is the famous din of Ben Pekuah. You guys know what Ben Pekuah is? I have never read any, but it has supposedly spawned the great literature in the Achronim. Ben Pekuah, the halacha is the following. If you shech the mother animal and you find a living vlad, and if you find a dead vlad inside, it's just part of the mother. If the shechita and the mother was proper, you can eat the fetus. If, however, the shechita on the mother, if the vlad is alive, then it's a machlokas hatanaim. But we paskin midin Torah, the shechita on the mother satisfies the shechita for the vlad. In other words, there are four simanim of the vlad, its own trach and esophagus, and the mother's trach and esophagus. And if you cut two of them, one of the two pairs, the vlad is mutter. Even though the vlad is walking around, is alive, it's really considered shachar, and you can eat it min haTorah. Only mid the rabbanon it's prohibited. Rav Meir disagrees. But that we paskin midin Torah, it's dead. And you're allowed to eat it.
Even,
so of course,
there's no Eiver Menachai.
Midrabanon, you're required to kill it, probably because of Maris Ayin. I don't remember even to what extent you require Shechita. But Midarais, it's mutter. So now here's the question. What if you, because it was part of the mother. It was a limb of the mother. If it has the taste within an animal, any part of an animal that has fleshic taste is basa. Okay? Chalav, even though it comes from a cow, is not basar, obviously, because it doesn't taste like basar. It's own status, right?
The whole urban myth of being able to make a cheeseburger from the fetus is bogus?
Absolutely, I believe. It's Beferish and Shulchan Aruch in the Shas. Shlil, I think it is basar b'chalav. It should be Beferish. I think so. Shilya is not. The placenta is not considered basar, but the shlil is considered basar.
Right. The Olam should know.
In case I don't want to be more in error here, I just want to quote you the Gemara in Chulin for a moment. No, I've never heard that because I think it's ridiculous. Okay, it's like a yeshiva bachur learned half a brisa but didn't learn the whole brisa. That's the difference. Okay, good. So the Amaratus has not infected the world totally yet. Okay, mostly but not totally.
I mix up the case.
No, yes, milk inside the udders, min haTorah, when you shech the animal, that milk is parf. The famous Gemara in Kala Basar. Some of you might have to hang around a few more years till then your day with me, but that's going to be not next year, maybe 2 years possibly for next year. Who knows? But the din there, Yalta, the famous story, Yalta says to Nachman, everything HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in this world, Leheter, Elisri created Kenegdo Leheter. The Gemara is on the bottom of Kuf Pesam and Beis in Chulin, Parakala Basar. So she said, where's Basa B'chalav? So he told his servants, go make her a chal, make her an udder. But with Rabbanan, we have a lot of chumras. In the end, it's like, we don't even eat chal. You can't find, it's very hard to find chal. I asked Alon Meltzer, I don't know if you remember you, some of you know him a little bit, kind of remember. I asked Alon if he could get us a hold of a chal. But he spoke to someone earlier, you really can't get a hold of a cow. You know, the udders, they just don't even bother with. There are a lot of chumras associated with it, and so they just don't bother, unfortunately. But just Larabos is a shlil. Okay, shleil is the basar daraisa. Okay, so now, of course, what happens if you take your ben pekua and now you make a shidduch with why you connect with bas pekua? And now you have a vlad. Well, they're both dead already, so it was the vlad might also be dead. So apparently, you could create adorim adorim of ben pekuas, and maybe they should never require shchita. We'd solve a lot of problems. I don't know. There's probably a whole literature about this. One day, you have to learn not your day with me because I don't do shchita. It's in hilchos shchita. Is the whole discussion of ben pekua. Okay, but now you have something to talk about at the Shabbos table. Okay, so okay, so I just want to close. Who asked that question? Hello, was that you? About Uber, who said asked by an animal? Mati. So let's just close that discussion. Forget about within the by an animal. There is a machlokas by an animal in a different context. Let's say you have a behemoth that's pregnant, and then an Adam is roveya the behemoth. So the behemoth is psul olam mizbeach because it's nirbas. What about the vlad? If the vlad is then born? Okay, I think there's a discussion that revolves around whether Uba Yerachimo, Uba Yerachimo. It could be that by Ben Pekua, that's a separate Xeris HaKasav, that Arba Simonim, the Torah was machshirin in this animal. Okay. By the way, if the shechita on the mother is improper, or the mother's a trefa, and the vlad is taken out alive after they shechted, then you can eat the animal only if you do shechita, because it hasn't had a proper shechita yet. Alex.
According to the Gemara in Yavamos.
Yes.
So if we say like the difficult reading was Rava, right? If we say like the difficult reading in Rava, that really it's the Ubar doesn't need a conversion because
right.
He's part of his mother and therefore he's Jewish, so fine. But if he actually needs a conversion,
right.
So then is he even Jewish when he comes out, or is it?
Listen. Ah, oh, excellent question. So I don't want to go much further on this. I know I've gone them far enough, but I know you're probably enjoying this also, and you're even getting a little bit of lum this year, which is there's a machlokas harishonim when you do a geirus whether or not the tefillah must follow the milah. Does the tefillah have to be the last step? The Ramban, if I'm not mistaken, brings a raya from this Gemara. From this Gemara, that b'di'eved the conversion is good. What's his raya? Because the vlad doesn't have his milah until the eighth day.
Well,
the Ramban is assuming that the milah done on the vlad at 8 days is his milah of conversion. If it were a milah on a Jewish child, then there wouldn't be an issue. Now, just an observation about the Gemara in Yavamos. I think that ultimately, if we were to say that it's the birth that gives the child its status, that these brothers are going to be brothers from the mother, we are going to say we don't hold like Rava there. In other words, assuming Rava means the simple reading, that the conversion goes on the children, not that they're born Jewish. That Gemara seems to be assuming Ubar Lav Yerachimo, but if we're going to assume what might be Ubar Yerachimo, and that the children get their status at birth and they're brothers from the mother because they're born to a Jewish mother, so we're going to reject that Gemara. In other words, we're going to reject it then, and then the whole Mila, of course the Mila is not a Mila of Geirus, it's a Mila of a Jewish child. It's a Mila of a Jewish child. Ah, so now I read you the braisa cited in the Gemara on Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis and Yavamos. Gemara says, Toshma, Shnei Achim Ta'omim Geirim, Lechem Roshuchrarim, two brothers, twins, who convert, not in utero, or two brothers, twins, who were freed by the master. Lo Chotzin V'lo Miyabmin, no Chalitza or Yibam. There's no mitzvah of Chalitza Yibam. V'ein Chayavim Mishum Eishasach. There's no chi of Veshasach because they're not brothers.
They could marry each other. If one dies,
I don't know if there's an Issa Rabbanon, but it's no more than that. Haisa horasan shelo bikdusha v'leidasan bikdusha. If they became the mother, it's by Gioris Dafka, became pregnant when, maybe by, I guess, a Meshuchar, same thing, when she was a Gaya or a Shifcha, and then was freed or converted, and then she gives birth, lo choltzin v'lo miyabim. Now that makes sense. Why? Because they're not brothers from the father of the Chol Ha'Alma. Aval chayavin mishum eishes ach. But they're chayiv for having bia with one another's wife. Means it's eishes ach min ha'im, and therefore it's eishes ach shalo b'makom mitzvah, and therefore it's arayos. And they're chayiv chatas for it.
If that's the braisa, and the Gemara Yavamos is no more, where's the conversation?
What's that?
If that's a braisa.
So you look at the sugya in Ayin Ches. The Gemara doesn't put the two together, but it's based upon this raya, I believe, that Herschler writes, and I think it's a pretty solid raya, that it is not the fertilization of the child that gives them the status there, but rather the birth that gives them the status. And since they are born to a Jewish mother, and they are born from the same mother, therefore they are achim min ha'im. Which is why, now, I am, so you, which is why, and I think this was the general position for a long time, was that we follow the gestational mother, not the DNA mother. I am told, but I have not seen with my eyes, that Chacham Ovadia Yosef Zichrono Levracha wrote a letter to the Machon Pua Institute that no, it follows the DNA mother. I do not know, I've never seen the letter, I don't know what the response would be to this particular Gemara, but in a situation where I think there are a lot of people now who end up being Machmir, you know, because we're not sure, it seems to me Pashut that it's the gestational mother, not the DNA mother. Now, this brings us back to our point, though, that why does it matter whether the child was Nizra Pekedusha or not? So for the purposes of this issue, if I'm correct, if Hirschler is correct, then it doesn't matter. In other words, it doesn't matter whether the child was Nizra Pekedusha or not, he will have a relationship to his mother. However, going back to the original point, even though I think it unlikely in the Gemara, if the father is Jewish, will he have a relationship with the father? And this is a common issue today, potentially common issue today, where Jewish men have a non-Jewish girlfriend, and then they get pregnant, and then they convert. So you need to know, or they convert, and then they get pregnant. You need to know whether they're pregnant when they convert, which is why, to the whatever extent, usually I understand practice of Rabbanim is when they have people like this who want to convert their non-Jewish paramour, is that they insist that they separate during the process of conversion. That's not because Havchana per se, that's because if you're going to convert, you actually have to act like you're moving towards observance of mitzvos. Not that she is violating anything, but even Imkozeh, even without that, they absolutely, after she converts, I would imagine, they would probably mandate a 3-month separation, unless if you held that a giyores stam who converts requires 3 months. I don't remember how we paskin in terms of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yosei. I think we paskin with Rabbi Yehuda. So mistama, every convert who converts should have to wait 3 months before they get married. I also imagine that this is true, although I think I've heard about this. I've never been involved in a case or heard specifically. If you have a couple, let's say, that weren't halachically Jewish, but maybe, let's say, from the former Soviet Union, thought they were Jewish, I don't know if poskim have a way of dealing with this, but presumably when they convert, they require them to separate for 3 months, should require them to separate for 3 months afterwards, and then they could make a nice chuppah and get married and live happily ever after. Okay, so anyway, so this is why the issue of Nizra B'Kedusha and Nizra Shelo B'Kedusha is such a potentially a crucial point. It may not provide an afkamina here in this case, but it will provide an afkamina in terms of potentially the relationship between the child and a Jewish father. And it will also, might create an afkamina, as Zach suggested, the Mishnah does say, Horasa B'Kedusha V'Leidasa Shelo B'Kedusha, Horasa Shelo B'Kedusha V'Leidasa B'Kedusha doesn't get skila, right? Which is an interesting question, why not? In other words, if I'm right, it's a question that has to be answered, if I'm right, why is it that the birth process doesn't give her the status of Bas Yisrael? So you look at the Gemara, it may be that there's a Gzeiras HaKosef there. That even though Horasa Shelo B'Kedusha V'Leidasa B'Kedusha, the children are related to the mother, that's clearly the Halacha. Right, it's clear the halacha, and it doesn't really matter if the father isn't Jewish. It doesn't really matter whether Horasa B'Kedusha or Horasa Shelo B'Kedusha, it makes no difference. She's not going to be related to her father, so you have to figure out what's going on in that sugya. But for our purposes, so it seems pashut that the child's relationship with his or her mother is determined at the time of birth. Okay, fine. Next, so let's go back to the Braisa. That very, very, we're still in the middle of the Braisa. Okay, see, we could probably read only 3 lines of Gemara all year and have every part of Shas connected to it. If you're interested, by the way, in looking at those Gemaras, again, Rava's Gemara is on the bottom of Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. The Gemara about the twins born to a convert at the various stages is on Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis. And the question of Ben Pekua is in the 4th parak of Chulin. It's in the Mishnayos there, and then you can find the Gemaras there. It's Behema Makasha Leilet is the parak. Parak number 4. Okay. All right, so firstly, Yaakov was reading. Remember that part. I don't even know what I let him read, but I think he read Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Okay? Tzriach Lahamtin Gimel Chadashim. Fine. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Why does Rabbi Yosei allow it right now? And when we read the Braisa right now, why does Rabbi Yosei allow her to get married immediately?
Because we don't worry that
Okay, why would we worry that she... Is she married? All right, so think about it in this brisa. She's not married. She's not married. So why would we think? Why would... So now go back to ask for Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, why do you require shloshes chodshei havchana? She's not married. So the answer must be... Well, no, Rashi, I don't think, said anything about that. No, he just said... Correct. Well, the assumption... So here's a crucial point in understanding the top Tosos. Crucial point. When the Mishnah says that a woman who converts after the age of 3 years and a day, that she's Becheskas Pa'ula, what does that mean? In Mitzias, what are we really saying? That what happened... Mati?
That non-Jewish women are if they have to live outside marriage?
Okay, but when?
At some point.
At any point between the time they turn 3 years and a day and the time they're converting, which, assume for the moment, is not going to be when they're five, probably. I mean, it could be if the parents are doing it, but presumably if they're making a decision to convert, it's probably, even if they're a child still, they at least could be 9 or 10, and maybe they're older. Okay, all it takes to make her a ba'ula is once between the time of 3 years and a day and up. When Rabbi Huda here says that a goya needs shloshes chodshei havchana, what is he really assuming?
We assume that she has sex every day and might get
pregnant regularly, and that put so delicately. Thank you, Adin. As your name would suggest, you know, Adin. Okay, it means that it is something of a regular occurrence that we are choshesh for. That a nachris would have bia. And therefore...
We're assuming even if he's making a line in the sand of 3 months, he's saying that we assume it happened the day before.
Potentially. Well, once we say it's a regular occurrence, we're going to be choshesh the day before. It doesn't mean it happened every day for the last 10 months. It just means because it happens frequently, it's a common occurrence, we'll be choshish that maybe it happened yesterday. We wait 3 months, and then we'll know whether she's pregnant or not. So she converts, and she can't marry or even have Averson until she has 3 months. Yaakov.
Is this assuming that there's no modern conversion process where she becomes more observant as she during a year or two when she's taking classes and whatever? Or nowadays, would we assume that someone in that situation is Becheskas
Pa'ula? A longer topic, which I don't want to really talk about today because this is sort of my pet topic that's always floating around in my head, is the question of the nature of rabbinic gezeros. And as a general rule, in other words, rabbinic gezeros, when are they binding when the reason is not binding, and when are they binding regardless? Right? Some of you understand why this is, the topic that's always on my radar screen. It's a topic I think about a lot. It's a crucial topic. And the answer to the question here is that it's very clear the gzeiros that were made in this context were a low plug. As it turns out, a woman not remarrying after the death of her husband or a divorce, let's say after the death of her husband, doesn't matter if her husband was climbing Mount Everest for the last 6 months, she still requires shloshes chodshei havchana. It's a machlokes ha-tanaim, but Rabbi Meir is the one who made it to treat it as an absolute low plug, and we paskin that way. So I have a suspicion that it also doesn't matter here. I have a suspicion, but I'm not 100% sure. Which is why I'm pretty sure we don't accept if the only grounds for leniency is a pregnancy test, we don't accept it. Because the Gemara had cases also where there was more or less the equivalent of the pregnancy test. They knew she wasn't pregnant. You know, her husband was a zaken. He was, he was lying in a coma for 3 months. Or not it's a little exaggeration, it wasn't a coma. But the point is, we know she's not possibly pregnant. And still, the Gemara said it was a low plug. Right? Therefore, my default assumption is that it makes absolutely no difference, even in our process. Alex?
That's true. How strong is the inference that the fact that we wait 3 months means that we assume that they're regular having intercourse?
No, because the point is, we require 3 months by a woman who is married. Married women, as a rule, generally do have regular intercourse. In situations where we know that the married woman could not possibly have had intercourse with her husband, we still are machmir shloshes chodshei havchana. But we have a single woman, we don't say with single woman from the time they decide to get married they have to wait 3 months.
No, I'm saying by the Gioris.
So by Gioris, the assumption is the reason if she was not married, the reason why we would make her wait 3 months is on the assumption that she regularly would have had bia. If there was no such assumption, it wouldn't be shayach to make a gzeir in the first place.
Well, maybe we're worried that
No, we're not talking about.
We're not talking about
discouraging conversion here. Firstly, she converts. We just make her wait 3 months to get married afterwards.
She knows at the outset that she is going
to
have a mikvah.
That doesn't seem to be what's going on in any of these sugyas. But the concern is just havchana. Yeah, Zach,
you're going to come. The fact that the Yehuda says the Yeris Benosha.
He doesn't. May not say that. Correct. So don't, let's leave that line out. That girsa ultimately needs to be erased.
We just the second.
Well, it's not here in the first one.
Well,
and the second one, we erase it. Yeah. The next brisa, Yisayos Habenosh Al Shem Yomechad Tzrichas Lahan Tegim Chadashim. So the Rishonim will think that based upon a parallel Gemara, it's not there and it contradicts Rabbi Yehuda Shita. And there are other problems. That's the big Tosus on the page. That's Dimasol Trichos. So that, based upon, Tosus says, ultimately Tosus is a long discussion, but at the end he says, we're not going to erase that. In other words, it's a Giyoras HaShuvah HaShivcha Shinit Dishtach Skyru, Tzrichos Lantin Yom Chadash and Nivra Yehuda. That's the way the whole series of problems. And again, the parallel Gemara, wherever this other place that appears in Yevamos, does not have it. It's not there. Okay. So the assumption of the Gemara then, okay, so let's get back on track here. The assumption of the Gemara is that the Agoya is having Bia on a regular basis. I mean, it's not just once, but it's that it's on a regular basis. So the question, so what's the Gemara's Kasha? What's the Gemara's Raya? And what's Rabbi Yose's position right now? Why does Rabbi Yose not require Shloshes Chodshei Avchana? Because she's single. Right now, assume that. Why do you assume that she's pregnant?
He still thinks that she would be having relations on a regular basis.
From the Brisa, as far as we're concerned, maybe he doesn't think that way. Now, does that mean that in the Mishnah, when the Mishnah says that Niskaira Yisera Mibashala Shana Viomechad, that Rabbi Yose, and that she's Beches Kaspula, does Rabbi Yose disagree? The answer is no. Rabbi Yose might admit that it's fairly likely that in the course of 10 years, she probably had Bia once. But he doesn't assume that she has Bia on a sufficiently regular basis, that she had it recently enough and she's probably pregnant, but she doesn't know.
But isn't it worth the... If you're... Like we mentioned a few days ago in Shir that the likelihood of... If she's 12 years old, the statistical odds that it happened when she was 6 years and a day, but that... Obviously, you can't assert that with any sort of confidence. So once you're admitting that it's happened, shouldn't you be chosheish that it's happened recently?
So again, how far do you want to be gozer is the question.
Is it based on how often we think?
We might very well say to the girl, if you haven't had, if you've had intercourse in the last, 2 months or 3 months, then we want you to wait. But we're not going to require it if she says, there's no chazaka running against her. So I'm going to assume Rabbi Yose's position right now is that we don't assume that she had been in the last 3 months that she's pregnant. Okay? So what is the stira? What's the assumption? What do you see from this? You see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a giyores is becheskas being niveles. And so you see what? That if you lump Shvuya and Giyores together, then presumably Shvuya also is Becheskas Niveles. Tosus has a question here. If this is actually so, why do you need to quote a Brisa? The Havamin of the Makshan. The Havamin of the Makshan was that Shvuya and Giyores have the same din. If that's the case, why did the Gemara need this Brisa to ask Akasha and Rabbi Yehuda? What should it have asked? There's a more obvious question. The Mishnah is the Stira. Why does Rabbi Yehuda argue only on Shvuya? He should have said, Shvuya, Gyores, and Shifcha, I don't want to say Arabic Dushasa, because the other two are clearly not. I mean, they have new Kedusha, right? But he should have said, they're all Becheskas Pesulos.
Doesn't that prove that he believes the halachot are different?
Correct! The simple reason of the Mishnah is that Giyores and Shifcha are absolutely different. So if you take a look at the top Tosos, my instructions were for people last was to do the Gemara and do the Tosim. How many of you got through the Tosim? Did anybody look at the top Tosos? Okay, so Yaakov, did you look at the top Tosos? Okay, so I'm going to take someone to step in and read the top Tosos. Now you see the question. That is the question Tosos is asking. Zach, go ahead. Unless I throw us here. The Sever Rabbi Yehuda B'Kedushas HaKaima V'Tanya HaGeores. Exactly as one of you said, whoever said that, right? It's really mashma, Yudi, right? It's mashma that he really agrees with that too. But yeah, it's about as explicit as you get, right? What if Rabbi Yehuda? It's as close as you can get to being explicit, not being explicit. Meaning, if Rabbi Yehuda hadn't said anything. Okay, no, but the Mishnah is also, for Rabbi Yehuda, here's the story. If Rabbi Yehuda didn't appear in the Mishnah, we could say he disagrees with all of them. But once he appears in the Mishnah, and then only argues on one, Shika Kehoda. So is it explicit? No, but it's about as close as you can get to being explicit without being explicit.
But it's still not explicit.
Well, let's see what they, also, it's not, okay, fine. Okay, so he says like this.
And that's Yaakov's point, kind of. But that, like, whether or not we consider, like, someone who's in the process of converting to be a...
No, I understand. You're correct. Right, and Rabbi Yehuda rejects it anyway. Right, Rabbi Yehuda rejects that point. So, in other words, the Gemara says.
We said we passed like Rabbi Yossi, or
no, I don't think so. I think we passed like Rabbi Yehuda. The little letters there, at least, I suspect we passed in that way. Satosa says as follows: that the fact that Rabbi Yehuda makes a distinction in the Mishnah alone, that in itself would not be a problem. Why? Because what is the Mishnah assuming? What is the Tanakam assuming when he says that a Giyores is not a Basula? That she had bia once. That's all. It only takes one time to make her a ba'ula. But even based upon the Mishnah, I could have assumed that, look, she's not having bia all the time, and when she decides she wants to convert, then maybe she might be nisar. That's what I could assume without the brice of Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, there's no inherent stira in the Mishnah. Right. In other words, the masnisan asi le shapir the mode begira shein laknas the vada he becheskes bula shenivala ba'ot shelo hayadat leskayir. Now feelum hayadat leskayir mahashosha b'shal shemechon mikoma kol lamitra nasha kein lesparin. That's that even if somehow at the age of 3 years and a day she decided that she wanted to convert, nonetheless she's not going to be so particularly concerned because she can't become pregnant anyway, so she's not worried about that.
But you have to be dealing with a tam. Is this not making a kinder to this mission?
No, he's saying, even if you wanted to argue, what about, in other words, the Mishnah is saying that all Gioreses are Becheskas Ba'ula. Even if they converted at, let's say, age, even if they decide age 3 years and a day they would convert. If they didn't, certainly they're going to be Ba'ula. The test is, even if at age of 3 years, firstly, she probably didn't decide then. And then she could have Bia before she decided, between the age of 3 years and a day. And even if she decided when she was 3 years and a day, Mistama, as a Ketana, any Ketana is not going to care that much because she knows she can't become pregnant. So you don't have to think it's a big deal. Therefore, the Becheskas Ba'ula. That is different than saying, in other words, the girl who's 3 years and a day is not maybe probably not converting when she's 3 and a half. Right? So it's not a big deal for her to have bia, even if she knows she wants to convert. But presumably a woman who is a gedola or a close age, so she does know. And she might, and based upon the Mishnah, it might very well be that she didn't have bia in that period. But just because she didn't have bia in that period, samach legeusa, doesn't mean that she's a psula. It just means she didn't have bia in that period and she wouldn't be pregnant. But Tosa says, Aval. So even though, once the Brisa Rabbi Huda says that a Gioris always has to wait 3 months, so that means even though she knew she was going to convert, and presumably she would be Mintra Atzma, that would be the logical thing to do, nonetheless, Afilu Hachi Ka'amar. Ah, so now, if we're going to say that a Gentile woman who's free still can't protect herself and watch herself from avodas from goyim, then certainly a shvuya who's their captive, and therefore what we assume that on a regular basis she might be nevelas, then you have to assume about the shvuya also who's mesura biadam that she will be nevelas. So how could Rabbi Yehuda? So that's why the Mishnah wasn't the stira for Rabbi Yehuda, but the Brisa was a stira. Okay, until the Gemara realizes that, you know what? No, even though it's Shavuya, we have to what the answer of the Gemara is. But that's how Tosis explains the question. Yudi?
Doesn't the Gemara just a few lines down say that a Giyorit lo mitra nafsha Shavuya and a lo mitra nafsha Shavuya mitra nafsha?
Correct. So the Gemara's answer... So the answer is, the Havamina was that the Goya would guard herself, and still... she can't protect herself from these, what's the term, you know, is the word, is the word, you know, the, not amorous is not the word that I want, the goyim, right? These she can't protect herself from these goyim. Certainly a shvuya, but once we say that giyores lo mintra nafsha, or goya lo mintra nafsha, it means, no, she, even though she's converting, still, she doesn't care. She's still in the frame of mind of hefkeres. Well, shvuya isn't that way. That's what the answer, correct, that's what the answer has to be for the moment. Yes.
Tosafot doesn't really spell out why Shavuya. Would you say Mistama Shavuya is not Nafsha?
Meaning she does everything possible to avoid. In the Brisa right now, even. Yes, in the Mishnah, correct. In other words, the reason why a Goya in the Brisa needs Shloshes Chachi Avchana is because Lo Mintra Nafsha. She doesn't. She hasn't tried to.
Even Mintra Nafsha, she's not able to.
No, if you say that, you can't say that, because if she's not able to, how can a shvuya be able to? We're talking about the first brisa right now. Yudi asked, how does the Gemara, if Tosis is explaining what the Gemara's kasha was, why they weren't bothered by the Mishnah, but bothered by the brisa, that's such a good explanation, so why does the Gemara then say that that it's a bad stira, that it's a bad question? It is a good question. If a goya cannot be, even if she wants to be mitra and afsha, certainly a shvuya cannot.
In the brisa.
In the Brisa.
But in the Mishnah.
No, so in the Mishnah, the assumption was that even a Goya could be Mitra and Afsha. She could.
But maybe
she does when she converts. But the Mishnah is not saying that she had beer within 3 months of converting. It said she had beer sometime before she thought about converting.
Right. Whereas so the. She's Mitra and Afsha, Mistama.
Always, but she can when she wants to, and a Shvuya could also.
But a Shvuya is always
Mintra and Afsha, correct. Once the Gemara says, when the Gemara says no, what kind of a kasha is that? The assumption is not that a Shvuya, they quote the Brisa. The Brisa says that a Shvuya, that a Goya, right now we think, cannot be Mintra and Afsha, and therefore certainly a Shvuya can't. So then the Gemara says, no, that's not true. It's not that a Goya can't be Mintra and Afsha. If she couldn't, then it's a good kasha. If she chooses not to be, but a shvuya, who's a nice, firm Jewish girl, she does everything in her power to protect herself. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda could adopt the position that Goya requires shloshes chachi havchana, but shvuya does not. And the Mishnah is also not a problem. There's no consistency between the two.
But this is something about why the Mishnah assumes that a Goya isn't international, but a shvuya is.
We understand why. A goya is hefker in her mind. In other words, you know the Gemara on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph when it talks about ger katan, not bealing ger katan. So why are you allowed to be mafiel ger katan? What's the Gemara's explanation? Zachen l'adam shalav afanav. So the Gemara says that there was a havamina that says pshita. The Gemara says a havamina that it's not as chus for a goy because just like an eved behefker nichalei, maybe a goy prefers hefker than being bound by mitzvahs. The Gemara's answer is that's only true by a gadol, not by a katan. Katan hasn't yet tasted the tamis, so therefore it's not. You can only say behefker nichalei, right? So the assumption is fair, not fair. The Gemara assumes that for already older goyim, so behefker nichalei. The truth is, it's unfortunately not only true for goyim, also it's true for everybody. A lot of people, once they've tasted, you know, the time of hefker, they like it. It tastes good. Unfortunately, I mean, fortunately, otherwise, without that, the world wouldn't continue to exist. However, unfortunately, because many people violate isurim. Okay. So anyway, so the Gemara's answer now for the moment is that Giyores doesn't care to watch herself, whereas a Shvuya does. Shvuya, read the answer. Read the answer. Amale, you can go back to Yaakov, you're back in business.
Our like Yarda Shvuya Karami,
Okay. So that's the answer. But now the Gemara says, okay, we got a problem anyway. V'rami.
V'rami shvuya shvuya. D'tanya. Ha'yorah shvuya v'ashir klash shaniftu v'shinik v'ayru v'shinik v'shinik shtafru.
Skip the next seven words or so. Okay, so, okay. Rabbi Yehuda requires that these people wait 3 months after their re-entry, or entry or re-entry, yes?
How would they bring in the first break that this one's
So I don't know the answer to that question. It's an excellent question. I think, if I'm not mistaken, no, Tosis answers a different question, different Bryce.
Yeah, that's essentially Tosis' question. This question that he asked in the first Tosis, except now on.
No, hold on. No. He's asking a question. Why, if the Gemara is going to bring this Bryce, which will actually present the question, why did they bring the other Bryce?
Why choose one over the other when one's more explicit? That's the same thing as why choose a Bryce over the Mishnah when the Mishnah is a Mishnah?
Okay. But no, he says different questions from a mechanical perspective. In other words, the point Tulsa ultimately says that the Mishnah is a totally different case than the Brisa, right? The Mishnah is talking about having ever had Bia once, whereas the Brisa, I understand, but fundamentally the reason why it wasn't a Kasha internally in the Mishnah is because the Mishnah is talking about Bia once, but the Brisa was talking about Bia on a regular basis. That's what Tulsa observes. But his question is, regardless of whether you know or don't know that distinction, the din that's recorded in Brisa number 1 is the exact same din that's being same scenario as in Brisa number 2, just expanded. So I don't know the answer to your question. I did have a different question. Why do you have the first Brisa? Why even have the first Brisa? I know the answer to that question. Why does the first Brisa only talk about a Gioras? Right? You're asking, why did the Gemara just jump straight to the second Brisa? I want to know, how come the first Brisa only spoke about a Goya? Yeah, about a Gioras, not about a Shifcha and a Mishachoras and a Peduya. Yeah.
It has to be about conversions
of Nida, not about. So it has to do with the first half of the Brisa. There's no Dam Nida, certainly Minat Torah, for a Goya, and there's certainly no Dinah Matam and the Mafreya. A Shifcha is Jewish. Remember that a Shifcha Kananis is halachically Jewish. She is a 98% Kiddushas Yisrael. She happens to already have all mitzvahs like an Isha anyway, because she and therefore there's an Isra Nida with a Shifcha, and obviously a Shvuya is Jewish in the first place, and of course she's 100% Kiddushas Yisrael, and her Dam is also Dam Nida, so the din of Dayashaita applies to a Shifcha even who's not Mishichveres, and to a Shvuya even who wasn't Niftes, whereas a Goya, the only one where it's Shaykh to talk about whether the Gzeira of Kol Anoshim Dayashaita, whether you Mitame Lemafreya Me'es La'es Me'pid L'Pkida, is only relevant by a woman who wasn't Jewish and converts. That's why the first Brisa is only has Gioras Shiniskaira. It doesn't have the others. But your Kasha is still a Kasha. Why didn't the Gemara immediately jump to this? Okay, maybe we'll say because Lahagdil Torah Ladira. That's the answer we always give when we have no answer.
Maybe just to use the concept of Nitra Nafsha. That sounds kind of far-fetched, but.
See, in the end of the Gemara, certainly it's going to be irrelevant. I find that seems to me to be difficult. Right? Ultimately, it's the wrong answer on some level, right?
Yeah.
Or not, right? In other words, I don't know, does the answer still stand in the end? I guess, according to the Gemara, if the Ukimta is made by Ra'ua, Shenim, oh, this is an interesting question. I take back what I said before. I don't know how we paskin. I suspect we paskin that you require 3 months of Havchana, even if she wasn't married before, but I'm not sure. Meaning, we pass like Rebbe that Tzrichan Shosh Chadashim, but the Gemara makes an Ukimta there. What's the Gemara's Ukimta? Re'u Hashanivala. There's Rabbi Yosei and Rabbi Yehuda argue in a case where they saw that she had Bia, so whether or not we require 3 months, even though she wasn't married. The question, I'm willing to take a bet, by the way, I'm willing to take a bet that the Rambam doesn't quote that Ukimta. I'm willing to take a bet.
Okay.
You could go check. The problem is there's no letter there. Before even checking whether it was a letter, I bet that way. How did I know that? I could be wrong, totally, but on the smach that I'm right, how do I know that? Look up the Rambam, by the way. Look up the Rambam. Perek Yud Aleph, Hilchos Gerishin, Halacha, Chaf Aleph, and Chaf Beis. I could be totally wrong, but this is an excellent, it's an excellent exercise in how to have a sense for the way the Rambam reads Gemara. Oh, it's in the back of our things, right? The let's see. Ooh, I don't want to be into the punch. If I'm wrong, I want to at least say it myself. So better to be misbayish mipi atzmo and misbayish mipi acherim. Ein odome. That's the Gemara Bava Kama says. Okay, Gerishin. Okay, 1 second. What parak did I say it is? Perek Yud Aleph. Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis. Shivcha shel Yishtrachu Yigersh Eskayim Amtina Tishim Yom. Vafilu Ger Ve'ishtar shel Eskayim, even if they're married. Okay, L'havcha Min Zera L'Zera. V'chein Yifas Tovar. Afal Pisha Nasnon Atora Shlosin L'Azatzim Atzichan Teshach L'Hazav Vlad. Teshach L'Tishim Amenes and Tata. Okay, the Rambam does not mention Roash and Evelah. Okay, so I'm right, first step. How did I know the Rambam? Okay. So the absence of the letter test. So to answer your question earlier, Yaakov, probably we require the 90 days no matter what. Okay, so next question. Next question is, how did I know that? No, I no, no, no. You were my witness. I wasn't putting on, unless you believe I was putting on a show, I said it and then said I looked at the letter to see and there's no letter there, right? But I said that before I saw the letter. How did I know? You go out telling Rebbe stories. Rebbe didn't know me at Ruach HaKodesh. You know what the Rambam would say. Okay, so the reason I sort of intuited this, is because it is not, once I knew the halacha was like Rabbi Yehuda, the Gemara here is making an ukimta. The Rambam has this very, very interesting habit of ignoring ukimtas. Yes. I'll give you what I think should be the most famous one. You know there's a patur that if I light a fire and it spreads to your backyard and you have a haystack and you have fancy diamond cutter tools sitting inside the haystack, you know that I'm pater from paying for the diamond tools. It's called tamun ba'ish. It has to be like sadeh. It has to be bagoli. Oa kama o sadeh. Okay? It's called tamun ba'ish. There's a sugi in the second parak of Bava Kama. Famous machlokas Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, whether isha misha mchito, isha misha mamona. When I am chayev for lighting a fire, is it because it's my mamon or because it's like I acted? The Gemara asks, on the assumption that Isha Mishum Chitzav, the Gemara asks the Kasha Korb Yochanan, when is Tamon Be'esh Pater? Because presumably, if I shoot an arrow and it hits Tamon of yours, I'm Chayiv. Tamon is only Ptur Neish, but if Isha Mishum Chitzav, it's like Adam Hamazik B'yadav, there's no Ptur of Tamon. So the Gemara has to come up with an odd case, what they call Kalulo Chitzav, without going into details. I lit the fire, there was a Mechitza right now between my fire and your object, so really by right, if things stayed as it was, the fire could not burn your object, and then the wall collapsed. Something happened to the wall, so any damage the fire does beyond the wall, even Rabbi Yochanan is modeh as isha mishem amono. That's where tamon be'esh is pater. You look in the Rambam in the last parak of Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, and the Rambam quotes, I think he quotes the din of tamon be'esh there, and guess what ukimta he doesn't quote? He doesn't say it's limited to a case of kalul ochitzav. The Magen Mishnah asked the question, why? And the Magen Mishnah says, because it's darkon shel Rabbeinu, lahaniach, I forget his exact language, you know, ukimtos in favor of pshutan shel Mishnayis and Brisos. It's kedarko b'kodesh. Now, there was a scholar who used to teach in the Bernard Revel Graduate School, who was not very much beloved by some of the Rashi Yeshiva who 50 years ago were mechuyev to do a degree in Revel, believe it or not. Once upon a time, it was a chiyuv. So who had a theory, which I believe is wrong, which is that the Rambam didn't recognize the authority of the anonymous layer of the Gemara, and therefore, he ignores many of those kimtos, ukimtos. Now, of course, this particular Gemara and the fact that the Rambam omits the ukimta proves that that's the wrong theory. It's not that the Rambam didn't recognize the authority of the anonymous layer of the Gemara, because this is not the anonymous layer of the Gemara. This is Rav Sheshes speaking. Halchiyam Rav Sheshes, b'ro'u asher nevala. So it means that the Rambam here, it's not a question of authority of the Gemara. The Rambam seems to understand, and this is what I think the Magen Mishnah is hinting to in that approach, is that the Rambam thought that sometimes the Gemara gave a teretz for something, but ultimately the Gemara didn't really think that was required in terms of what the Braisa meant and how we paskin. That's Kedarko Bakodesh. So having seen enough Rambams like this, so that's why I looked at this and I intuited that I'm betting the Rambam's not quoting the Sukkimta. Sometimes I'm wrong on that, but in this case, I happen to be correct. Yes.
So then why would he quote
it? Why would he? So I think that the Magen Mishnah would probably say is that it depends how much of a... There are two things that are going on. And the Magen Mishnah may say this here. Number one, it's an Ukkimta, and it's not Pshutan Shel Mishnayos HaBraisos. Number two... The main sugya, and I think this is the bigger issue, I think this is the more important factor for the Rambam. I mean, you require this, this is even more important. The main sugyos of Eish and Tamun Ba'Eish, which are found in the sixth parak, make no reference to this sugya in the second parak. They don't quote the din at all. So I think that the Rambam certainly recognizes the authority of the entire Shas, anonymous layer as well. I do think that the Rambam, I think it has to do with reading different sugyos. I haven't taken the time, by the way, to look at the sugya in Yevamos to see how that works out and whether there's something different there that would cause the Rambam to omit it. But this is the kind of ukimta the Rambam often tends to omit. And lo and behold, he omits it here. Okay, Ezra?
I've heard a shiur that we see multiple places in Shas where it's pretty clear that the Gemara didn't actually think that's what the Mishnah meant. It just said that to get back to like the main topic of the Gemara and get it back on track.
I'm not sure how to parse your statement. I'm comfortable saying that there are a lot of ukimtos in the Gemara that aren't pshutan, but the Rambam does paskin like a lot of them. I think it has to do with the role of the sugya and the presentation of the Gemara, whether it's sort of in the mainstream or it's kalachariyat. I think that's the best way I would describe it for the moment. So I'm not sure that's something different than what you're saying. Saying that there are ukimtas in the Gemara are interpretations that are not pshat in the Mishnayos, and you want to say maybe even the Gemara knew it, that's okay. I've spoken about that on other occasions, about sort of the rules of engagement of Amoraim with the Tanaim, and that they can't argue, but that they can interpret. That may be fine. I'm not sure that it's pertinent to the issue of the Rambam. Mati, had a question or no?
No, that's good.
Yeah, okay. Fine. So now the Gemara has a problem. So anyway, so what's the answer? So we got a problem here. Because they now quote... Now let's quote the second Braisa. Read the whole Braisa. Go ahead, Yaakov. V'rami shvuya shvuya. Okay, now let's get the cut to the chase, as Yudi wants us to do. Let's quote the actual Braisa. That's the problem. D'tanya? No. You read it. I apologize. Okay. So now, Ishtik. He had no answer to the question. So So he turns around, and it must have been 1 second. There's Roshesh is talking. I'm sorry, Rami Le was Rapapa Bar Shmuel said to Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef had no answers. So Rabbi Yosef, so you don't know, if you ask me a question I don't have the answer to, you know what I'm going to do? I said, okay, well, what is the answer? You have an answer? So that's what he says. So you have an answer. So he says, obviously he had a thought. He was more like testing Rabbi Yosef than he was wanting. He wanted to see what Rabbi Yosef would say. Did he have an alternative approach? So he's Midi Shmuel Chala Amar Le. Ah, no, it's a case, reason why Rabbi Yehuda requires it here. It's not that a Shvuya and a Gioris automatically we assume they had been in the last 3 months. It's that it's a case where they saw that they had been. So then, he says, Ihochi. What is Rabbi Yosef's reason? Why would he say that they don't require Shloshes Chodshei Avchana? Rabbi Yosef agrees that when a couple get divorced or the husband drops dead, Rabbi Yosef certainly agrees that the husband, that you require Shloshes Chodshei Avchana. The assumption is that there's a chazaka that a husband and wife have bia. That's a chazaka. It's actually important chazaka for other halachic reasons in Yevamos in the 15th or 16th parak. And as such, we would assume they have bia, and therefore they require Shloshes Chodshei Avchana. So in this case, there's no better reason to require Havchana if they saw Ruach and Evelah. So the answer is Shalot is Aber. So she uses a moch. A moch is a cloth, and somehow she uses this to prevent pregnancy. There are two possibilities, which I'm actually going to leave the sugya to Daf Lamed Tes, but we should get there this month, and we'll talk about the sugya then, because that's the Ikar sugya. That's where really the Gemara quotes the Gimel Lashem Sharm Shus B'moch. A moch is either a cloth that's used as a barrier. The modern-day equivalent, although perhaps better than the Talmudic moch, is what's known as a diaphragm, or there's an alternative called a sponge. It's something, those at least don't physically interfere in the act of tashmish, but after the sperm or the semen enters the vaginal canal, it serves as a barrier for the between them getting from where they are getting to the into the uterus where they will need to be in order to fertilize potentially an egg. The moch might not have even been that far. That's one possibility. The other possibility is a moch is a cloth that you use to wipe out the semen after tashmish. Probably a much less effective form of a birth control, because you better get it fast enough and get all of it, and that's not always going to happen. What?
There have been studies that have demonstrated that form of contraception is probably more frequently helps conception.
Because it pushes things along. Yeah, okay. Well, I won't quote the context, but one might say, one might apply here the situation to a certain senior colleague of mine who once commented, what do you call people who use the rhythm method? The rhythm method is abstaining by sort of trying to time fertilization. And the answer was parents. So that might be applied to this context as well. Okay, yes, Zach.
Why do you think Rashi says
Let's not talk about this till we get the Daf Lamed Tes, okay? The bottom line is that a woman who's Mezana, whether she's a Goya or whether she prepares herself, right? She brings her birth control with her. Fine. So that's why Rabbi Yose says, apparently they're arguing whether or not Isha Mezana is Meshameshes B'moch or not, okay? Shalot Tisaber. So now the Gemara says, Bishlama. Right, she keeps a moch with her. But she goes, that's no, because she knows I'm having my fun now, but in a few months, and I'm kin running, in 2 weeks, so therefore I don't want to be pregnant, but fine. Okay. She always has her contraception with her, because she never knows when they're going to take her and rape her. Okay? Shifchanami. She heard that her owner was considering freeing her. Okay, that's one way a shifcha might go free. That's when you choose to free, if there is a word, manumit, your eved, or shifcha, not because of shein v'ayin, so presumably it's not a decision, we hope, made on the spot. So therefore she has an idea that her master may be preparing to free her. However, Eliyotza, right, if you have a shifcha who has bia, and she has no idea that she's about to become free, because she doesn't know that the husband's about that the owner's about to knock her eye out or tooth out. So then, why would she be mishamet? Why would she have a moch readily available? The chitema. Lo, if you want to say that any time something happens suddenly, Rabbi Yose is moda, and Rabbi Yose is moda that you require shloshes chachav chanamati. Is your question?
It goes back a little bit.
They just finished the question. Chitema kol mamela lo amar Rabbi Yose, but harei. So anusa and mafuta are examples of women whose exposure to pregnancy is sudden, right? They don't know this in advance, and anusa doesn't, and mafuta probably doesn't. So the Vitanya. The letter seems to indicate there we paskin like Rabbi Yose. So you see, Rabbi Yose doesn't matter that suddenly, but so why not? You have to give an explanation. Why is Anusa Mafuta not require Havchana? So the answer is, okay, I don't know what this means. Obviously, I assume something of a misconception. Misapeches means to roll over and over. I don't think that's an effective form, to the best of my knowledge, of birth control. Now, there are some politicians who think apparently that it is, there are those politicians who believe that if a woman doesn't want to become pregnant, she can stop herself from becoming pregnant. So apparently, that's probably in the category of misapeches. I don't know what this is, but
Rabbi. No,
that's misapeches does not mean with a moch, because the whole point is a woman who happens suddenly doesn't have a moch. She has nothing available to use as a moch. Therefore, misapeches is its own thing. It's like if you turn over, engage in physical vigorous physical activity. So then it sounds like you'll stop the pregnancy. Okay, fine.
Is that assuming that like a mafuta will realize immediately after what she did, or?
Yes, I think most people realize immediately after, you know, what she did and what she has, you know, in the heat of the moment she may not care, but moments after the deed is done and the pleasure has been taken, it's like, oops, now what do I do? Right? So that's why she will be mishapeches. Okay, so the Gemara, and what about Rehuda? Ah, Isha Mizana Misapeches, not Mishameshes Pamoch, Misapeches. If I were voting, frankly, I would have voted with Rabbi Yehuda on this one. But, okay. So anyway, so that's what the Gemara's Maskona is. Okay, so Mati, let me take your question. And then, I think that this sort of deals with most of the issues. Just tomorrow... tomorrow, I want to think about that Rambam a little more. I haven't looked. Take a look in the Nosei Kelim on the Rambam and see if anybody raises the question. I want to focus primarily on the big Tosas Trichos. You should look up the, as you should, and I didn't, I confess, look up the entire parallel on the Gemara Yavama, see if there are any differences that might be relevant, that maybe will help explain the Pesach of the Rambam. So that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, that and Trichos Lahamtin Shlosha Chadashim, which also relies upon the parallel Gemara. If I have a chance and I remember, I'll try to put together. I'll excerpt the Makaros for you. Mati, what was your question?
Just that before you said hikha mamtula for the shvuya means that she doesn't know when she's going to get raped.
Correct, and therefore she always keeps something with her.
Doesn't mamtula mean they'll bring her something?
Yeah. In other words, she's in her cell. She's being in prison somewhere, so she always keeps it with her because she never knows. You know, she never knows when they're going to come take her, when they're going to bring her to whomever.
Okay. It's not what Rashi says.
What does Rashi say?
He says that she never knows when they're going to bring her to like a port where there will be Jews or something.
Oh, that's interesting. I did see that Rashi, and I let it slip. Why does he say that? I guess he assumes that they would have done what they would have done in her cell or something like that. I would have assumed the Shvuya never wants to get pregnant. That's a little odd, no? A Shvuya doesn't only not want to get pregnant when they're about to bring her, you know, for ransom, right? I'll check. I didn't notice any other Mishnah say anything, but I would have thought that mine would be more logical in terms of a Shvuya. But I have to see. You have to think about what motivates Rashi to say that other than just the language from Matula.
Fits in with the rest of the things in that group. It's less about, you know.
You're right. You are correct. That's why Rashi does it. But the question is, in other words, Mamatu is not the Gemara's word for pidyon, though. That's what's interesting. Right? Rashi has to make a big jump. Rashi agrees it's bringing her to the auction block, and then maybe a Jew is going to marry her. Okay, I don't know that it matters one way or the other that much. Either way, it still amounts to the same thing. Rabbi Yossi believes that that certainly in a case where she has just been ransomed, even according to Rashi, she always is Nisar. Not Nisar because, we're just arguing why is she Nisar. Rashi says she Nisar because she's afraid she'll be redeemed and she doesn't want to be pregnant at the time. And I'm suggesting she would not want to be pregnant, period. Okay, fine. Okay, any other questions? No.